Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Roker Report podcast. I am your host, Connor Bromley, and I'm here today to present to you a victory podcast. Yes, that is right. Sunderland defeated Oxford United 2-0 on Saturday, and suddenly everything is a little bit rosier in the garden of Mackham Land. To digest the game today, we are joined by Christopher Wynne. Are you in good spirits today, Christopher?
I certainly am. First win of the season, 4 points out of six. Much better than last week, mate.
We'll jump over to Niall now. Niall, how's things going for you today?
Yeah, good. Yeah, obviously very positive after that performance and result yesterday. So yeah, all good and sunny Blythe.
Excellent. Okay, so I'll quickly jump through the action from yesterday. Sunderland took the lead through Luke O'Neill early in the second half when he expertly finished a very scrappy move. I think scrappy is a fair word to use there because it wasn't the finest of worked chances. But then Lyndon Gooch added a second when he just suddenly became Leo Messi, took on the whole Oxford team twice. And, well, it felt like twice. I think he probably only took past three players, but it felt like more to me. And then he slid the ball past the helpless Oxford keeper. And just before we get started properly today, I just want to take a minute to think about Wigan Wanderers and how they are still practicing their not wanting to play football by getting hammered yesterday. So just a moment for them. They're sticking to their guns there.
It's a shame.
Probably social distancing on the pitch if they got beat 5-0. So just wanted to give a little shout out to them. So let's begin. Chris, what's your initial thoughts yesterday when you saw the team selection? So this is before you've seen Mo win 2-0. What were you thinking? And now, looking after the match, is Phil Parkinson vindicated by his selection?
Take the first part first. So I did the preview during the week and I did mention about Parkinson's kind of obsession with having the holding midfielder in front of the three centre-halves, which I didn't think he needed against Bristol Rovers, which I don't think anybody thinks he needed against Bristol Rovers except Phil Parkinson. But what I did say on the preview was that this was actually, I think, a perfect game for the way Phil Parkinson sets his teams up. He doesn't set his team up to go at, you know, average sides at home who are going to sit on the edge of the box and try and keep a lead. I think he's shown in the past that he needs a plan for that. But these type of games where you go away from home, you need to keep it tight, and then you're going to get the first goal and then start playing from there. It shows that he can do that. He can set the team up to do that. Ledbetter came in, did that job, I think, much better than Dobson did last week. But, you know, to be fair to Dobson, that the situation actually suited that role this week. But Ledbetter played well. We got the result. We got 3 points. And you can't say that there's no way kind of Phil Parkinson got it wrong. He got it right and we won the game.
Niall, would you agree there? Do you think Parkinson now, you know, sort of 24, 48 hours after the game is vindicated by his tactical decisions?
Yeah, I think everybody kind of half had the pitchforks out, didn't they? 2 o'clock when the team sheet was announced yesterday. I was definitely guilty of that. Criticised that. I couldn't understand it. I was a bit confused by it. I thought it was far too slow. I thought, you know, O'Brien, Danny Graham, Grant Ledbetter, Chris Maguire, all in the same 11 was a little bit, I just thought we were going to get outpaced. But yeah, I'll hold my hands up. I was completely wrong. I think the second half made the first half make sense. Tactically and you know, the first half we got down and dirty, so to speak. We didn't really have that many chances, but they didn't have many chances either. We kind of snuffed them out. And it was like, say, we kind of just stopped them from playing. And then in the second half, we just got a hold of the ball. And that's what led Brett, I was there to do and kind of dictated play. You know, we were the ones that kind of made the game what it was. And Oxford didn't, where they'd never really had a look in, did they? So, like I say, the second half did make the first half make sense. And if that makes any sense to you. But yeah, it was, like I say, you know, like what Chris just said, totally agree. You need to hold your hands up and say, yeah, he did not get it wrong yesterday. He got it completely right, and it did surprise a lot of people, including myself.
Just to come in on a point you made about that first half there, the way the second half you said made sense of the first half. I mean, from my point of view, with that first half matched up almost with last week's first half, how bad we were last week in the first half against Bristol Rovers. And we came out and looked slightly better last week against Bristol Rovers. And I think the same happened this week where he got them in at half time. And there was a realisation that Oxford were there for the taking. The 3 points were there because they showed nothing in that first half, really, to show that they had any threat kind of, you know, going forward. And we kind of had them in our back pocket. But the problem was, in the first half, we didn't have any threat either. So I think Phil Parkinson, it seemed like he put a rocket up them and said, you know, if we start playing, that, you know, the 3 points is there for the taking. And we seem to come out with that sort of realisation that all we need to do was kind of take the game by the scruff of the neck. And that would seem we came out for that second half.
Back to just final point on the team selection quickly. Obviously, Dobson came out, Grant Ledbetter came in. The place on the bench was filled by Conor McLaughlin, which I think most fans were a bit confused by, putting a right back on when you've got a Dan Neil or a Jack Diamond there who it feels like deserve an opportunity after impressing when they've been given a chance in pre-season and then in the earlier cup games. Niall, what did you make of the decision to not include them on the bench? And is it getting concerning now that we might have another sort of Bali Mumba about them youth players, whereby they've obviously got quality, they're obviously good, but the manager isn't willing to risk putting them in, which means that, you know, come a year's time, they might think that they see their future elsewhere?
I think it's strange because I think you do have to question it and wonder why he's doing that. I don't think it's fair to criticise it. I think because it worked, we got the points. Phil Parkinson's quite old school. I think once he makes a decision, you know, he just wants to win football matches. I think for whatever reason, he thought the experience was the way that was going to win us that game yesterday. It did, really. And good use of substitutes, which is things he's been criticised for in the past. But it is a bit of a shame to not see them coming through. Is there a reason behind it? I don't know. I think these players, you know, it's competition for places as well. And yeah, I think at times the fans would love to see it, but the fans would only love to see it because they haven't seen enough of it. And it's everyone gets excited when there's a Bali Mumba or a Josh Madger or something like that coming through. Everybody gets excited and wants to see more of it. But we don't see what Phil Parkinson sees every day. We don't watch them in training. We don't know what these lads are like. Maybe they're not ready for the big stage yet. I mean, it could be something as simple as that. I don't see why he would have included them so much in pre-season and in the cup games if he wasn't, you know, going to include them throughout the season. And I think he will. And you've got to remember, you know, 46 games, we're basically playing a lot of Saturday, Tuesday. It's going to be for virtually the rest of the season, just about. We've been lucky the last few weeks because of the cups, but that's what it's going to be. You need a big squad, and I think we've got a big enough squad, and these young players, I can't see we're going the full season without using them. So maybe he's just keeping them fresh, getting the points on the board first, and then when injuries come through, he'll bring them in. But like I say, I don't think it's fair to criticise him on it, but I would certainly question and ask him and like to find out why he's doing it. But I'm sure there is logic behind it.
It'll be interesting to see whether or not they feature for the under-23s this week. Okay, back to the match though. First half, Niall, you touched on this before, but, you know, was this the grand plan of Phil Parkinson before the game? Did he sit in his war room and go, yes, we are going to grind out a horrible 0-0 at half-time and just nullify all the threats of Oxford, and then the second half express ourselves and, you know, get all 3 points? Chris, do you think that was the intention of the game, or do you think we just were really poor, Oxford were really poor, and in the second half, Parkinson got his team talk and tactical tweaks right, while Carl Robinson persisted with that mundane football he was offering?
I think we maybe showed Oxford a little bit too much respect in that first half. I think Parkinson went into that game, you know, Oxford were a good side this season, they're one of the favourites to be up there this season. And I just think we went out first half, gave them a bit too much respect, didn't kind of really think, well, let's go at them from the off. And I think, as I said earlier, I think there was just a realisation with the way that the game petered out in that first half, where it was just it was a slog. It's a slog to watch, never mind a slog to play in. I think even the players would have kind of hated playing in that first half, especially the midfield, just watching the ball kind of go over their heads either way from both sides. It was just a horrible game in that first 45 minutes. And like I said, I think there was just a realisation that was just, let's step this up and go at them. Because I think he started off by saying, let's keep it tight, let's be cagey. And then when he got into half time, I think he just thought, lads, these are there for the taking. Let's step this up, get the tempo up from kickoff, get that first goal, and we'll beat these. And I think that's how it turned out.
Niall, would you agree, or you got a different take on that one?
No, I agree with what Chris is saying. I half agree with that. I think he has come out there to be tight. I think that was probably in his team talk before the game. And that's the reason he made the 11 he made. That's the reason he had Ledbetter there. I think he wanted it tight. He wanted to keep a hold of the ball. I don't think he obviously expected it to be as scrappy as what it was. But I do think that you know, his intentions were to stop Oxford from breaking. Because Oxford have got some pace in that team, which we've seen before. And I think he just wanted to kind of nullify that and get the half time. And so, like, I'm a bit 50-50 on what Chris is saying. I think there was a little bit more, you know, strategy behind it. I think it was a plan. I don't think he improvised as much as what Chris is suggesting, but I do think that there was a bit of both. It just shows that Parkinson, you know, for the lot of criticism he gets, it just shows that, you know, he has got the experience of this league and he can make decisions and can change things and when he wants to and they can work.
Chris?
Yeah, I think you might well be right with that, Niall. You might be spot on. But as a football manager, how do you come up with a strategy to have a first half like that?
Well, no, I don't think he said, right, lads, we're going to have a horrible first half. We're going to be scrappy. It's going to be awful. Everyone's going to think it was awful. I don't think it's quite like that. I think, like I say, it was just keep it tight, keep things together, stop Oxford from playing. They're the home team. I know it's a little bit different without crowds, but they're still the home team. It's still a home game for them. It's still a game that they would have looked at and thought, we need the 3 points here. I don't think people look at us anymore as a bonus point like they might have used to. I think they do look at it as a chance to win. So, I think it was just that. It was just keep it tight, keep it short, and then make the substitutes, which he did. Likes a Linda Gooch, who can change a game and win it. I'll tell you, you've got a big smile on your face.
I'm just thinking of those last words before we go out. Right, lads, no passing on the deck, and make sure those aimless 50-yard balls are there, right, lads? Just for the first 45 minutes, and then we'll change
I'm
it.
I'm going to probably say that the truth is somewhere in the middle. I think Parkinson probably came out with the idea of not conceding in the first half, but I cannot imagine he was that impressed with the way we were playing, which brings us on to the second half nicely as a good little segue there. So second half, suddenly it looks like a very different Sunderland side. No substitutions as well, just a rocket up their arse seemed to make all the difference at half time. And suddenly we started playing football and, you know, using the qualities we know the squad has. We know that we're a passing side. We know that we have more quality technically than most sides in this league. And then the goal comes, Lugo 9, which wasn't much quality about the build-up, but the finish was very good in itself, and not many teams will have a right back who's capable of scoring probably between 5 and 10 goals come the end of the season. So I suppose the first question is, and I'll throw this one straight to Niall, why is it that in the second half they suddenly started playing like, as Sunderland fans, we know they can, we just don't see it enough? And what is it that changes inherently with this team where at times they show these glimpses of, you know, 45 minutes of brilliance, but sometimes throughout that turgid first half at Oxford?
Well, it goes back there, right, lads? We're going to be shocking first half and then be brilliant second. No, it's... it's just like I've just said, really. I'm just going to repeat myself in a sense. I think there's so many times that you see Sunderland come out all guns blazing. Like, that has happened over the last couple of years in League One. And then we end up drawing 1-1 and everyone's disappointed. And that happens quite often because we don't score the goals. Yesterday, I think it was a little bit more organised and there was a little bit, you know, more strategy in it. I just think he thought Oxford were going to come out like that and we just stopped it. And defensively, we looked so strong. I think that just complemented what Parkinson was trying to do. And that's why it kind of looked like that's what he intended. And that's why, like I said before, how in the second half, he managed to change it up and managed to, you know, keep the ball on the floor. Because we, like you said, we are a passing team. I don't think we're not big enough. We don't have the presence that other clubs do at this level to sort of loft the ball up. And I know a lot of people say Parky ball and that's how Parkinson likes to play, but I don't think that's what he wants to do because we just don't have that in we're. And Charlie Wake, for me, isn't good enough to kind of get on the end of enough of that. So I think that's why we play the football we're playing, which is probably a subject that you're going to come on to later, but which is why I would play Greg up front, but obviously we might come back to that. But yeah, I do think that it's nice to see that Sunderland are playing football. And is it coincidental that it's only the second half that they've started doing it after a pretty cagey first half? I'm not sure. I really don't know, but it's interesting anyway.
But Chris, I think part of what I was trying to articulate there is if you can play as well as you can as we did in the second half, why wouldn't you set out from minute one to do those things? That's what doesn't really make sense to me.
Well, yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing there. I mean, I said it last week after the game. My initial reaction was, I don't get it. And then I did, I think I recorded a pod during the week, the preview, and I said, I don't get it. And my issue is with, you know, that performance last week against Bristol Rovers and the first half yesterday is, you know, we've got some good, we're one of the best sides in League One. And when we get the ball on the floor, you can see the likes of Maguire, the likes of Gooch, you know, Max Power, you know, even Will Gregg, when the ball was played into his feet, you could see last week he's got a nice touch and he knows the game, he knows how to play the game. He's a good technical player. But why don't we play to their strengths? We don't play enough high tempo in the last third with, you know, with the technical players we've got and use their strengths. We play these aimless balls, we try and win the second balls. Sometimes, I mean, even yesterday, especially in the first half, the amount of times our centre half's got the ball and it was an aimless ball forward and we just gave away possession so cheaply and you're kind of shouting at the screen going, imagine if you're the manager on the sidelines, you should be shouting at them, just pass it 10 yards, keep possession, keep the ball and give it to the players who can play. Instead, half the time it goes over their heads. And I'm just hoping that second half, when we got the ball down on the deck, showed what we can do, means that Parkinson's going to say to the players, right, this is how you play. This is the game plan. You know, get into the final third, step up the tempo, you know, take players on, be positive, and that's how you get goals. That's how you get chances.
So the goal itself, Lugo 9 scores it, a very good finish. To me, it poses the question, which I think Sunderland fans have asked since Lugo 9 signed for the club, should he be playing somewhere else than right back, i.e. should he be playing further up the field? Niall, I know you probably think that he is a right back and he's done well there and he's played a lot of games there, but do you think that there is an argument to be made that Sunderland should be looking at recruiting a right back so that they can get Luke maybe a little bit further up front?
Sorry, I'm still mesmerised by Chris's passionate speech there. I mean, no one else can see his face. I can see his face and I think his vein was going to pop in his forehead there when he come through. I don't know. Chris Wynn for manager. I think, yeah, he's the one we need in for the for the motivational speeches, but no.
He's drinking out of a kiln at jar, which is what I like.
Oh, he oozes cool. I'm the biggest Chris Wynn fan on the planet. I've been very vocal about that. But
back to the point now.
Yeah, back to what I was going to say. I do think Luke 09 is now a right back. I think he's just played. He's played there so often. I think he's good at it. I think he's good at getting forward. I know he does get questioned a lot defensively at times, but I think in this league, at League One level, you know, most fullbacks are going to be questionably, you know, like they're going to be questionable at doing something, and his is defending. But at the minute, our defence seems pretty tight and seems pretty good and organised. So I think it doesn't matter as much. And he is good at getting forward. And like you say, he's more than capable of scoring 4 or 5 goals a season, which is, like you said before, more than what other fullbacks in this league will do. So I think play him there. And if you look at his actual career record now, he's not too far off playing, you know, as many times as what he has right back as what he did centre midfield. So I think he just, it's handy because if we do need to play him in the midfield or further up attacking midfield, we can. He's that option. You know, it just adds more depth, really, doesn't it? And Conor McLaughlin, for all the criticism he gets, if you need him to slip in there and do a job, he can slip in there and do a job if needs be. So yeah, I think Luke O'Neill is my right back. I wouldn't look at bringing another one in. I think Luke O'Neill's probably happy with that. I mean, we all know what he's like, and I think he's the type of player you could probably see. You're going in nets, Luke, for this game. You're going in goals, and he'd probably be, yeah, no problem, that's fine. But like, in a serious note, he's, you know, I think he's competent at right back, and I think he loves getting forward. He's got pace. And no matter who plays in front of him, whether it be Maguire or Gucci or whoever plays in front of him, he's always got a good working relationship with him. They've always seemed like they've got a good understanding. So, yeah, I think he's a right back now. He might argue differently, but I do think that's his position now.
Chris?
Yeah, well, I'll just quickly say on that is what you were saying there about Luke and I, you know, getting into those positions. When he's in that mood and when he's been asked to be positive and getting that final third care, I think he is effective on that right-hand side. I just think his performance last week against Bristol Rovers, where he seemed to be, I don't know, there seemed to be a mental block there last week. He was going backwards and sideways when he had the ball. He wasn't making them runs in behind. He wasn't looking for the ball out wide. He wasn't making any runs. And this week, first off, it started off that way. Got the ball, looked back, looked sideways, never looked forward. Second off, just completely different mentality. And you saw he got in those positions, got a goal. And when he took, I can't remember what chance it resulted in. I think it was O'Brien, wasn't it? O'Nine beat a couple of players on the right-hand side and got in and then knocked it across the box. When he's doing things like that, I mean, he's more like a wide midfielder in the system we've got. But I just think maybe in home games against the likes of Bristol Rovers, if we maybe moved, had Diamond out wide and maybe moved O'Nine in the middle to get some energy in the middle and get the tempo up against some of the average sides, I mean, like you said, now that might be a plan moving forward kind of later in the season.
Yeah.
I just want to talk a little bit now about the general fullback situation. Denver Hume, I think it's fair to say he's blossomed into a very competent and solid left back at League One. He's got his flaws. I think his final ball's not the best, but as a young player, I can see Chris Wins Coleman here. As a young player, I think he's developing into a solid left back. Do you think that we need to be looking at bringing another left-back in, though, to help push him, maybe a more experienced one who can help teach him? Chris, I'll throw it to you. I'm guessing you're not Denver Hume's biggest fan.
No, I think he's got the tools. I think he's got a great touch on him. I think he's learning all the time. He's still young. But I think at this point, you know, we've said it for too long about his end product. I mean, fair enough, in his first season, yeah, he needs to improve his end product. Second season, yeah, he needs to, you know, improve his end product. Third season, come on, what are you playing at? You know, at some point, you know, improve your end product. Just too many crosses yesterday. He did blind. He didn't look up. He just hooked it into the box. He just needs to improve that. Kind of be switched on when he's got the ball in good positions. He's effective. He gets the ball. He was positive. He just needs a cross on him, and he'd be fantastic on the left. But I do think we need cover for him, and maybe someone on, you know, at least level terms to try and really push him, because I think that could be the key to making Denver Hume into one of the kind of top left sided players, and certainly in League One.
I mean, I know what you're saying about the end product, and I would agree that his end product is poor. But yesterday he did create some chances. He played one across for O'Brien, which O'Brien should have scored. Technically, it was his cross that was fluffed by O'Brien that resulted in Luke O'Neill's goal. So I think his end product is improving, I would say. I think he's getting better at it, and I think he's clearly working on it, and I think his choices are improving.
I'd like to see some stats, because he hooked in a lot of crosses that, you know, and not many times were there close to anybody getting on the end of them. There were a couple, but my problem is he does it without looking. He needs to look up more. He tries to hook it into areas rather than picking someone out.
We don't know if that's not, you know, you might be told, look for areas, this is where they're going to be running. I don't know. I'm just being
possibly
devil's advocate there.
Possibly.
But we'll jump up. Lyndon Gooch gets the second goal. He just jumps into full-blown messy mode and just decides to take on everyone and slot the ball nicely in. Niall, do you think that's why it's important to have players like him on the bench? Because, you know, if you bring them on, you know, they've got that little bit of quality that maybe we're lacking during the game.
Exactly that. I think if you look at what Gooch can do, it's, you know, he can be frustrating, and, you know, he gets a lot of criticism, and he's had a lot of criticism recently, certainly, but he's got that little bit of quality. I think just the fact that he has been in and around, you know, Premier League players and stuff like that, and obviously he came through the academy with, you know, when the academy was actually decent, and he has got that bit of flair, and like you've seen it against MK Dons last season, you know, and that absolute worldy goal, and he scored another one against Doncaster, and he's, and yesterday that was just daft, that sort of goal. I mean, the thing is, if can you be critical of Oxford's defence, maybe, but I think it doesn't matter, you know. It was, nothing was stopping
him. They were mesmerised by Gooch, and they just didn't really know what to do with this.
If you actually see it, it's not as simple as the fact that he's just ran and ran and ran. Like, he fakes a pass at one point, and it's just a quick one where he kind of lifts up his boot and then just puts it back down and kind of tricks the Oxford defender into going the other way, and then just runs round, and then a lovely, cool little slot past the keeper. And how many players at this level can do that? How many players at this level? How many teams have got a player that can do that? Especially a player that can come off the bench and do that. Not even a starter. I mean, like, it doesn't happen. It's, you know, it's a bit like a cheat code for this level. So I think you know, it's absolutely amazing the fact that we've got that option. And I think Gooch is, obviously, he's going to be banging on Parkinson's door tomorrow morning, because I would be if I just scored that goal, you know, and being like, I need to play every game because I've just done, you know, that's what he's going to be doing. But competition for places is so healthy, and we've seen that. And like I touched on earlier when you talked about the young lads coming through, that the fact that we've got the depth is so vital to what we need to do. Like I said, it's such a long season, especially with the Cups, and the fact that we've got these and we've got options like that. There is no team in this league has that kind of option. So, yeah, I think it's fantastic, and hopefully it can work more than that throughout the season. Yesterday, last season or the season before, that would have been a 1-1 draw. There would have been a corner come in, it would have bobbled off about six players, and it would have went off the back of one of Oxford players' horses, gone on the back of the net, and we would have been sat here trying to figure out how I haven't won the game and how we've come out with a 1-1 draw. But the fact that Parkinson brought Gooch on when he did, that little bit of extra pace, that little bit of, you know, flair, he killed the game and finished the game. So, yeah, brilliant.
I think now I got excited about that one there. Though I must say, last season we did win 1-0 away at Oxford. They didn't get one in off the arse, so maybe wrong on that point. Do you think that Lyndon Gooch now potentially should be in the team ahead of Aidan O'Brien? Aidan O'Brien's the player that I've picked out just because he was, I would say, ineffective yesterday. Chris, what do you make of that? Do you think Gooch now should be in the start 11?
Well, it's a difficult conversation for Parkinson to have if he doesn't put him back in after that. You know, if he turns around and says to Gooch, well, you're on the bench after that, producing something like that. I mean, what you want to do is to say, you know, to your players who don't make the 11, right, when we ask you to come on, you produce, and that's how you force yourself back into the side. So, I mean, if Gooch comes on, does exactly that, and still doesn't find himself in the team, that's a tough conversation for Phil Parkinson to have with Lyndon Gooch. And as Niall's just said, I think everyone knows that Lyndon Gooch, when he's on form and when he's, you know, when he goes through those odd consistent patches where he has, you know, a run of 8, 9, 10 games where he's really producing, he's getting the goals, which he did for Parkinson last season at one point. Parkinson knows that he's going to be one of the best players in League One. And if he shows that type of form like he did yesterday, I think he has to go in. And I think O'Brien, he shows that he's got a, you know, he's a good player in pre-season. It hasn't quite worked for him in the two games he's had. Not all his fault. Service hasn't been great for him. But yeah, I think Gooch has to go in. If it's not for O'Brien, I don't know, does he play four attacking players and change the system slightly? And maybe kind of one of the midfielders come out, maybe Maguire comes out. He wasn't fantastic yesterday.
I don't see him bringing Maguire on that team.
No, but I mean, like I said, O'Brien seems like the only kind of option really if Gooch is going to come in. So yeah, maybe.
Okay, we'll jump now. We talked about the fullbacks before, but the central defenders I think deserve a lot of praise this season. 4 games in all competitions, no goals conceded in open play. Do you think this is the best defence we've had in League One since we've been relegated a couple of years ago, Niall?
Yes, without a shadow of a doubt. It's the best defence. We've also got the best cover we've had. You know, I think coming out, like Jamadjali, we'll go with that. He looks competent. We haven't seen enough of him yet, but to think that he is still to come in if there's an injury or whatever, it's good and it's relaxing to know you've got that cover to come on, because I've been quite vocal about Ozturk. I never trusted him personally. I thought he was too slow, lethargic, and had a mistake in him. And I didn't like the thought that he was our only option coming off the bench at centre-half at times. And same with Lynch, I was a bit sceptical about him. I don't so much feel like that about any of these players at the back. So, yeah, I think it's by far the strongest defence we've had. And they look like they're communicating with each other brilliantly. And you touched on the full-backs before, they're doing their jobs. And the centre-halves are covering them when needs be. If, like, Savonin or Hume want to get forward, they're slotting straight in and covering them. So, yeah, it's good to see. And I don't think anybody would doubt the fact that this is by far the strongest back line we've had since we got relegated to League One.
I think you've hurt my feelings there talking about Alim Ozturk in such a negative way. Chris, what do you make of that? I mean, I think I'll just put one little point in there before I let you go on a tangent, but I think the way Parkinson sets up the right centre-back and the left centre-back really help the full-backs and give them a bit more licence to go forward as well. I think that's a very good good defensive tactical system that Parkinson's introduced.
Yeah, and I think that's why I know people have knocked Flanagan in the past, but that reason, what you've just raised there, is the main reason why Flanagan is on the left side of that three. I think, you know, his experience of playing at fullback helps him a lot in that position, where he can come across, and if the wing back's out of position, if Hume's pushed forward and a wing is attacking Flanagan, he's used to people attacking, you know, and him defending in the position that fullback would be. Not necessarily in the natural position of a centre-half. So I think that's part of the reason why Flanagan's on that left-hand side. And in terms of defending, I mean, 100%, you know, with Niall on that. I mean, in terms of defending, this back three, they haven't really been troubled. I mean, we've conceded a penalty, a really daft penalty. And the only other chance I can remember the opposition really should have scored was that one, that header yesterday that went kind of across the face of goal. Other than that, we haven't been threatened at the back at all. What I would say about the three at the back, the other point I actually wanted to make there was Bailey Wright. I mean, he's going to be, if we can keep him fit this season, he's going to be incredible in the middle of that three. I mean, what a centre-half at this level. Amazing signing. But what I would say that about that three in the first two games is I think it's important. I think they're more important than some people give them credit for in terms of, you know, how they set us up in an attacking sense, because in the second half, you saw them playing the balls into midfield, into feet, and let the other players get on with it. And they were knocking it wide to Hume, knocking it wide to O'Neill. In the first couple of games, it started to go wrong when we were attacking from the centre halves, and they were trying to play those long balls that were going wrong. Now, if they can sort that out and just say, right, give it short, give it to the people to start the attacks, play some nice, you know, 10, 15 yard balls into feet, into the middle of the park, in an attacking sense, then that will really improve our general play going forward. But defending, I mean, they've been superb so far.
Moving on now, central midfield. I think this is probably the position where there's most question marks. It looked like Power and Dobson were going to essentially have that role to lose. And I think both players, Power's done okay, picked up a knock though, so we don't know what his status is. Dobson was poor in the opening day, got himself sent off. Next question, Scowen, is he going to be an option? Ledbetter did really well yesterday. Is he now an option? Dan Neal, potentially an option as well. I've probably forgotten someone off that list. But what do you think, Niall, makes the most sense for us as a team in that central midfield area going forward? Or does Parkinson just change it on a game-by-game basis?
I think it's a headache that I wouldn't like to have as a manager. It's a good headache, but it's a really tough headache to work out, because I think a lot of people Scowen, a lot of people think he deserves a chance. And, you know, when you watch him, yes, it was against Villa 21s, it wasn't against the best opposition, but you're seeing glimpses of what he can do, and it would be nice to see him in there to see him have a start and see what he's like, and, you know, and then even if Parkinson has got a problem with him, and if there is something that Parkinson doesn't quite like, let the fans see that, and then we can know it, or at least tell the fans or whatever, because like I say, that there is a lot of confusion, but I think we've got enough there, certainly got enough there to, you know, to play football, but also get down to the nitty gritty when it's needed. So I think the midfield's fine. Scowen, like I said, I would love to see him in there, but there's obviously a reason why he's not throwing him straight in. I mean, I don't know if he's Chris McQuire's backup, is what he said the other day, but it's, you know, for whatever reason, he doesn't fancy him just yet. But I'm sure he will. I'm sure we'll see him at some point, and we'll probably be here criticising him at some point as well. So, no, it's certainly looking healthy in the middle of the park.
Chris, what do you make of the centre midfield options, and what do you think is our best centre midfield if everyone was fully fit?
Well, I think what these first two games have shown us is that I think we need a game plan to match the opposition and the situation. So I think last week, you know, with Dobson, as I said a few times, Dobson in front of those three, we didn't need him there. There was no need for him to sit in front of those three. You might as well have said to Dobson and Power, look, get forward as much as possible. But, you know, you're experienced enough to know that if there's a threat, you know, in behind, and you need to drop a little bit. But I would have pushed them on forward last week. But the situation against Oxford, Ledbetter came in, played that role absolutely brilliantly, won the ball, gave it easy, sometimes kind of used his passing range to get us going, knocked out wide. I think we've got, as Niall said, we've got some brilliant options now. We've got Neil to come in, who looked good going forward as well. Scowen looks good going forward, as he did in pre-season. And hopefully some of these forward kind of players who like getting forward is going to help us in those games at home where we drew last week and last season, if Parkinson's willing to push them further up the field and kind of, you know, make that holding midfield player redundant. It'll be interesting to see how Parkinson plays. I hope he's learnt from these two games that he needs to kind of change the system based on who we're playing.
The other conundrum in this team is striker. So Greig didn't get a look in yesterday, obviously started on the opening day. Charlie Wyke looked fairly decent during his little cameo yesterday. He was winning headers, which we don't often see from our target man. He was getting himself about. So I thought Wyke did him well. Graham and O'Brien, you know, we've talked about O'Brien already, but Graham didn't, you know, he seemed to struggle yesterday, but obviously it was his debut, so you don't want to be too harsh on him. And I'll throw this one to Chris. I know it was Niall's turn, but I've let Niall have the first two, so I'll let Chris start on strikers. What is the answer to our striking dilemma going forward? You know, who do you think makes more sense to give a game to, or like the centre midfield, do you just treat it on a game by game basis?
Yeah, it's a tough one because that one up front role is such a niche role that it's tough to play, and especially the way we've played it in three quarters of the games, the two games. There's only really the second half yesterday where we kind of really getting forward and creating chances. But Will Greig, I felt sorry for him last week against Bristol Rovers. He had to drop back and drop wide to actually look for the ball, and he wasn't getting in the positions where he wants to get in. He wasn't able to make the runs that he wants to make as well. So Danny Graham, we didn't see much. He hardly touched the ball because of the, you know, in that first half. And second half, even when we were attacking, he seemed to be the one kind of holding it up and linking the play. So I don't know. I think Danny Graham out of our options at the moment is going to probably get us more goals. Although I'd like to see Will Greig be given another chance if we play like we did yesterday in the second half. If we're really going at the team, you know, creating chances, because I think Will Greig will stick them away. So I don't know. I'd say for now, because we got the results, stick with Danny Graham. But I'd like to see in one of the home games, if we really go to somebody, I think Will Greig is probably the best option to come back in, you know, if that scenario comes back round.
So, Niall, would you agree with Chris's assessment there, or have you got a different answer?
No, I'd agree with it. I'd agree with what he's saying. It is a very difficult one. What I will say is that I think we've got four capable strikers and different strikers, and I think that's a main thing, because we don't have a striker who's going to go out and score. Well, we're potentially doing Greig, but it's obviously not working for whatever reason. But we don't have a 30 goal season striker by the looks of it, right? But if you can get, you know, four strikers who get 8 each, like, you know, you're recreating that striker in a different way, and like like I say, we've got four strikers who are very capable, and I think they're all different as well. I mean, he's seen Aidan O'Brien yesterday. Yeah, he missed two sitters, I'd say, but he got in the positions. He made the runs. They were both difficult, you know, runs to make, and he got there and he did well. You know, how many times have we sat here and said, but we're not getting in the final third enough, we're not creating these opportunities? We did yesterday. Yeah, he didn't finish them off, and the game probably should have been finished before Kuchar to come on and do his messy, but it's, like I say, it's just, it brings something different, and Danny Graham brings something different, and Wyke brings something different, and I think it's really good to know that you've got four, the choices of four, whereas if you've looked in the past few seasons, who have we had to bring on up front? Antoine Semenyo, again, he's a bit young, he's a bit raw. Jerome Sinclair, Keziah Sterling, you know, these players who never really did anything. They didn't have that flair. They had a bit of pace about them, but that was about it. We've got more than that now. We've got options who we can bring on. You can turn to that bench with 20 minutes to go if you need a goal, and you can take your pick. And that's an important thing to have. I think it's clever if that's what Parkinson's done. If he's done it like that, trying to recreate the kind of 30-goal a season striker, then it's clever, and I hope that is what he's doing, because I think it could work.
So, Parkinson, just mentioned him there. We're going to talk about him now. Last week, a lot of stick from pretty much everyone, all throwing pelters at him, all tweeting about him. He ignores all the white noise. I know that for a fact, because I've spoke to him about it before when I was at the club. You know, how do you cope with the Twitter barrage that you can get? Well, you don't read it. Fair enough, Phil. But if you were going to give him a rating out of 10, 10 being he's 100% safe in your eyes, he's a good manager, he's what we need, or a 0, which is we should sack him right now, where do we sit on Phil Parkinson between 0 and 10? Chris, I'm interested to hear what you think.
And when you say mark out of 10, we're talking not on his Oxford United performance.
Talking about how you feel about Phil Parkinson at the minute going forward, with 0 being essentially I would get rid of him as soon as possible, 10 being I feel like he's a long-term, you know, the best manager we could have right now.
Wow, what a question. I'd probably go for something like a 6. Last season, he, in my eyes, I think he failed last season. I think he took over when we were in a position in the playoffs and we finished outside the playoffs. You know, we talk about points per game and all that sort of stuff, but at that point, he was outside of the playoffs. We should have, for my eyes, we should have been pushing. He had long enough to be pushing for at least, you know, cementing a place in the playoffs, never mind pushing for automatic at that point. He was that's why he was brought in. That was his job. So I think he failed last season. He's had a summer. He seems to have got a way of playing in place at the moment. But I just think the jury's out on him. I think he was under pressure after last week because, that, as I said last week, that was the easiest game on paper out of the first four. So then we had to go to a tough place like Oxford and go and get a result. And he needed that, because imagine our conversation today if he got beat yesterday. I mean, we were completely different, and he certainly wouldn't get in the 6. But he's got some tough games coming up, and I think we just need to be threatening for promotion and in and around those top 6 and looking for automatic. And that's our expectation. That's his expectation. So we can't say that we're asking over the odds from him. We're not expecting miracles from him. We're expecting what's expected, what should be expected. So the jury's still out. He's got some time because of the situation at the club off the field at the minute. So I think it's just kind of game by game at the minute and see how it goes.
Niall, a 6, is that too high, too low, about what you're thinking?
I totally get what Chris is saying. I would probably go sort of 7.5. I'm a little bit higher, but I mean, I'm a Parkinson fan. I like Phil Parkinson. I thought Phil Parkinson was the right man to come in. Obviously, I know a lot of people disagreed, but I thought with everything that goes on off the pitch at Sunderland, you know, Phil Parkinson's the best man to deal with that, because he's had 10 times worse at Bolton. So, like, I've always been a fan of him anyway, but at the minute, I think, yeah, he's the man to take us forward. I don't see what any point would be of sacking him. Like Chris said, though, if we had getting beat yesterday, you know, then that Peterborough game would have been massive for him. Absolutely huge. So, I think you've got to keep him in. You've got to keep him in. I believe in consistency with managers. I like what he does. I like the way he speaks. I like the way he, you know, he bigs players up at times. And, yeah, fair enough, he did say like he was going to bring the young ones through. He hasn't done that. He's got reasons behind that. John was on the podcast the other week saying he would like to see more balls from him. I think he doesn't quite make the tough decisions sometimes. He's done that with them two young ones because there's people asking questions about it. He brought the OAPs in yesterday and we managed to win the game. So, like I say, it's, you know, I think he has got that little bit of bite, that little bit of, I don't care what the fans think. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do, which I think is best to win this game. I'm going to bring on the subs I want to bring on. And again, that's something that he's shown with Scowen. A lot of people want to see him. He's not really utilised him that much. So yeah, 7.5. I can't see any other reason not to have him. I like the manager and I think he is going to be the manager to take us back to the championship. I definitely think that, 100%.
You heard it here first. I was just putting my hand up when Niall was saying there was some people who thought that we shouldn't have appointed Parkinson, and I was one of them. But yeah, now he's here. He can crack on. But yeah, he's got a chance. And I think I've said in the past before, you know, I don't think Phil Parkinson will ever manage another club the size of Sunderland again.
No.
So this is his opportunity in management. I think if he can get us going, I think it'll be his only opportunity to manage a club this size that could take him. You know, I mean, infrastructure-wise, we've got the potential to go to the Premier League. So if he gets it right, you know, good on him, fair play to him. It's his opportunity. And just a quick point as well, I'd say that in the two sides that we've played so far, I don't know whether this is going to be a trend going forward. I hope it is. But Bristol Rovers and Oxford United were pretty poor. You know, if this is how it's going to continue, I think League One's there for the taking this season.
Yeah, I feel like League One's been there for the team for the last couple of years, Chris. Right, we'll jump ahead though. We'll look ahead to the Peterborough game next weekend. I suppose this is a two-pronged question. Number one, what do we expect to see from Peterborough going forward? We know they've had a lot of changes and they've lost some of their better players. And the second thing is how do we see Parky approaching the game? You know, does he go with more the team that we finished with on Saturday, or does he go with the team that started, or does he go with something different? So I suppose, Niall, I'll throw this one at you initially. What do you expect from Peterborough? What do you expect Parkinson to do with the team?
I think, well, is it too early in the season to call it a six-pointer? Because I think at the end of the season, we could look back at it and think it was pivotal. You know, it's two teams who both feel like they were hard done by last season with the points per game. Probably more, well, definitely more so them, but still, it's two teams who want revenge. Obviously, Peterborough, they were getting beat 1-0 until the 91st minute yesterday and managed to pull together, you know, a win. So, obviously, they've got big characters. They've got some good players. Yes, they've lost a lot of good players, obviously, with Ivan Toney and Madison and players like that leaving. But they've also, you know, they've got Johnson, Clark, Harris, players like that. They've recruited well. I think they've always recruited well in this league. So, I don't know what to expect from Parkinson, because I'm hoping that he's going to... It might be sensible to, you know, play the likes of Ledbetter or something like that in that hole again and just try and control the game and try and sort of make sure we dictate it and they don't dictate it. That could be the difference in it. It's going to be interesting. I think Peterborough, if they want to, they can play counter-attacking football because they've got the pace. And they've certainly got the talent to do that. So if we do want to just, you know, pile on pressure, it could go against us. Parkinson's definitely got to look at that. I really don't know what to expect. I mean, nobody expected the starting 11 that he put out yesterday. So it's, you know, who knows? Who knows what he's going to, the way he's going to approach it. I would hope that he would approach it in the manner of, you know, being sensible. Like I said before, keeping a hold of the ball. We're good with the ball. I think everyone can agree we're good with the ball. We're getting better without the ball, which is something that we weren't good at, but we're getting better at it. So fingers crossed we can have the ball more than we don't have the ball, and that's the way Parkinson needs to look at it.
Chris, do you agree with that assessment there that you've got, well, Niall said he basically has no idea how Parkinson will approach it. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, Niall mentioned it was a six-pointer, and I mean, if you look at last season when we got stuffed at their place 3-0, was it Luke O'Neill and Charlie White got sent off and we had a bit of a horror show. Yeah. But actually, I mean, if you look, if we got those 3 points, I mean, not sure either. I think that would have impacted the points per game at the end of the season. We might well have been in the playoffs last season. So, you know, sometimes it rides on a game like that. But yeah, I mean, I can't believe how much money they've spent for a League One side, considering there's no money sloshing around. I know they sold, I can't remember the guy who they sold Tony. For. Yeah, they sold him for a decent wedge. And there's bought Harris and Schmodics, I think. I don't know whether that's a right way of saying it, but they've spent a couple of million quid, which not many people have been able to do in the summer. So, they'll be, you know, they got a result last week, like Niall said. They'll be looking to, you don't spend that sort of money in League One in the current climate if you're not expecting to be up there and get results. So Darren Ferguson's going to be under pressure to get results, and fair enough, they got one last week. So I think that they're going to go all out. I think they'll think they're our equals in this division, and fair play. I mean, we've finished on the same points, maybe not the same games, but we finished on the same points. So I think both teams are going to go at it. And I think in terms of the way we'll set up, I think we've seen enough from Phil Parkinson to know how loyal he is to players who give him a performance. And I think the only change he might, I think Ledbetter will still be in there. I think he'll be happy with the way he protected the back three. He'll keep him in there. The only change he might make is the one we discussed earlier with Lyndon Gooch coming in. And I think that will give him headaches before the weekend. But I think that will be the only change he'll make, if he actually does make any at all.
I would probably agree with that. Interesting to see, obviously, Max Power, whether or not he'll be fit, and if he'll replace him with Josh Scarron or maybe go in a different direction. Well, I think that is a wrap for us today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please remember to subscribe on your favourite podcasting app or on YouTube. Thanks to our guests today, Niall and Chris. Pleasure speaking. Great way to spend a Sunday. Not great to look at. And hopefully next weekend we are here talking about a beautiful and stunning 3 points when Sunderland hammer Peterborough United 7-0. Why not?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.